Monday, September 21st, and you are listening to episode number 15 of the Just Nerd Stuff podcast. My name is Corey. These are my co-hosts,
Kurt,
Jacob.
Get ready to run, because it's time for our spoiler review of the Maze Runner sequel, The Scorch Trials. And last week on TV, Doctor Who is back, and we'll be analyzing the first episode of season 9. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
More like good night for me.
Good night for you. Kurt just started a new job.
Yeah, I work third shift now, and we're recording at what time is it?
It's like 7:30. Oh, yeah. It's like 8 o'clock.
No, it's like eight o'clock.
Now. Yeah,
we're good now. You're all right. You'll get through.
I'm tired, but I'll get into it.
You'll get excited. Get excited.
Yeah.
So thank you all for downloading our podcast and listening with us today. In honor of Doctor Who, I actually got a gift from one of our friends, Jared Peterson. Shout out to Jared.
Heck yeah, Jared. We miss you. We want you to come to Ally Who with us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you?
I keep forgetting to message him. I'm so sorry,
well,
Jared.
Well, now it's in the podcast.
Well, now it's in the podcast, Jared. If you're listening to this, message us and we'll give you details.
Jared,
we'll
I have no idea who you are.
He's a cool dude.
But you're welcome to meet him.
He's a very good friend.
Dudes.
So when he went to Britain and he got some Doctor Who stuff, he went to the Doctor Who experience, which I'm very, very jealous of you.
Oh, yeah.
And he brought us back jelly babies, a nice big bag of it. I've never tried actual jelly babies, so we're gonna open up this bag and we're gonna try a little bit of them here.
So anyone who's seen Doctor Who, you should know about jelly babies.
The Fourth Doctor is very known for asking the question,
"Would you like a jelly baby?"
So which colors did you guys just pick up?
This one's
red,
like pink.
So
or red.
Oh, these aren't even flavors. Okay, listen to this. The red is brilliant. The yellow is bubbles. Green, Boofles, purple, big heart, orange, bumper. Oh, there's a light purple, baby Bonnie.
I would like to eat bubbles.
Okay, well, I'm going to eat an orange one.
What was orange?
Bumper.
I like bumper.
Oh, my gosh.
Hmm.
It's like pure sugar.
Yeah. It's like a gelatin almost, like a very thick gelatin.
And they don't even look like babies.
Well, they have a shape.
Kind of.
They kind of look like a mini Buddha.
Ugh. I just wanted to eat babies.
I don't know if I like this. Is there a red one in there?
I don't think I could eat a lot of these. You know who I think would love these, though? This is Justin.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Justin
would eat these up, like, the whole bag in, like, a minute.
He would eat them drunk.
He eats any kind of those, like, really sugary snacks. Like, didn't he get those, like, really sugary gummy worms one time, and he'll just eat them up?
One time. Every single time we go to the gas station, he grabs, like, a bag, like, 4 bags of candy.
Yeah.
I can't.
74 grams of sugar.
Yeah, I know.
In one piece?
In one piece.
Oh, no wonder it's hard to swallow.
Yeah.
So, if I was...
Oh, wait, no, I lied.
I was about to say, that's an overload.
For four of them. Four of them.
That's still way too much.
No,
four of them
is 19.5 grams.
What? That's
way too much. That's.
It literally just tastes like pure sugar.
It does. I mean,
I'm glad I finally got to try it, but
I don't
think I could eat these.
I don't want any more. I don't even really like candy to begin with. I don't like candy. I don't like soda.
I mean, I don't like fruit snacks. I usually like chocolate or caramel.
Yeah, like if I'm going to eat candy, it's like chocolate or like just a plain old chocolate bar or like Twizzlers.
But man, that is...
Like I hate them, but I kind of want more.
Sure, have at
it.
No, it's like this is bad.
If the sugar wakes you up, have at it.
It's one of those where like you feel like if you eat another one, you're gonna feel uneasy, and then the third one, you're probably going to puke.
Yeah,
it's true.
I mean, I'd much rather have like the fruit snacks you get at like you know, those big boxes.
They're very grainy.
Yeah.
How old are these?
They're not that old. It's fresh package. I just opened up.
It's just English, so it's kind of like.
And I wanted to taste test it now at the
best before 11/21/15.
Right.
We're good.
And because we're going to the Doctor Who convention, I was waiting for that, but then I was like, I'd much rather have it a little fresher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I'm glad I tried it, but still, As much as I love Doctor Who, there ain't no way I'm probably going to eat any more of these.
Nope.
No offense, nope. Doctor Who.
But thank you, Jared. Thank you for letting us...
If anybody wants the rest of these jelly babies, please comment, because the bag is now opened and it's going to go bad because we're not going
to
eat them.
We'll ship it to you free of charge.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Look, it's a thing.
Where?
What?
Bish what?
Bish what?
So there's this movie that I was recommended to watch from my friend Josh. Hi, Josh. And he sent it to me. It is this mashup of all these different movies in the realm of movieverse. And it's a mini film. It's about 10 minutes long. It's on YouTube. It's called Hell's Club. And it is one of the more funnier things I've seen on YouTube.
It's very good.
It's trippy. Imagine just every club dance scene you've ever seen in any kind of movie ever. And all of those clips mashed up together into one big scene. It's where fictional characters meet. That's the way it's pitched. Fictional characters meet when they're not on duty doing movies. So it starts out with, like, Star Wars Episode II. Obi-Wan and Anakin walking into, in the movie, they walk into whatever club it is. I forget what it's called. But they're walking in, and then you have, like, Ewan McGregor from Trainspotting looking over and seeing himself as Obi-Wan. He's like, he's just kind of trippy with it. And then you have, like, Anakin walking around the club looking for the changeling. But then John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever looks over and eyes him up and gives him, like, a little smile. Like, you get these little smiles.
And
you
I
get.
Love how when, because he did that, and then Hayden Christensen noticed, he looked away, and then he got really mad.
Yeah.
Like John Travolta just went.
His facial expression.
He just got, like, so annoyed.
Just, like, the person that edited this together just took the best facial expressions they could capture from the films and made it look like the different characters were looking at each other with these weird faces, like, what?
Yeah, and there's, like very little dialogue, so it's really awkward.
Yeah, yeah, it's, like, it's really awkward. It's just, like, they're playing, like, what's the song?
Staying Alive.
So, yeah, they're playing Staying Alive, like, the whole time.
And like, a number of different renditions.
Yeah. And then it's, like, just different, like, remixes of Staying Alive. And then, like, the same actor, but a different character, they look at each other, like, it's like they almost recognize each other.
Like, you have, like,
and then they're just like, what?
You have two different Tom Cruises, you have two different Al Pacinos, you have, like I said, two different Ewan McGregors. You have Terminator in there, you have Blade, RoboCop. They're all showing up in there.
Hellraiser.
Keanu from
Matrix.
Neo and Trinity from Matrix.
And John Wick.
John Wick.
And then our, like, Jacob, and I agree with Jacob, this is our favorite thing, where all mayhem goes loose in the club, everybody starts shooting up everyone, and Hellraiser's just in the back of the room going,
Yeah, just, like, laughing, like, extremely menacingly. Just, like, he's so happy everyone's being shot.
But yeah, but it was a very fun video to watch, and that's why we're pointing out for you today. Go check it out. It was one of the more amusing things I've watched on YouTube. So let's get into Last Week on TV, guys, with Doctor Who, Series 9, Episode 1.
All right. This week's episode is called The Magician's Apprentice.
Yes.
Yes.
I wonder who they're referring to.
I still don't get it, yeah. I really don't get the title.
There is a part in the episode.
Yeah, they call him the magician.
Yeah, they call him the magician, but I don't understand the apprentice part. But anyway, that's besides the point. Let's get into the episode. Okay, so basically it starts out in the middle of a random war on a planet that is unknown, and there's a small child running around. Long story short, he gets trapped in a field of hand mines, and he can't move. And now, hand mines are completely new to me, at least. I don't know if they were in the older series.
That I've ever seen it before. I think this is brand new.
Yeah, so it's a brand new concept. Basically, what hand mines are is they are literal hands in the ground, and they're pretty much undetectable unless you have a device to scan the ground with. And they have eyes in their hands so they can see you. And
right in the palm.
Via Pan's Labyrinth.
Palm. Yeah. So basically, when you're walking across the ground, the hand mine comes up and grabs you and pulls you down into the earth.
Yeah.
And it's so creepy looking.
Makes me wonder what else is down there besides just the hands.
So the doctor shows up to save this kid. And he tosses him his screwdriver, and he asks for the kid's name, and the kid is none other than Davros. And if you don't know who Davros is the creator of the Daleks, the Doctor's worst enemy.
Even though the Master is also
yeah,
like,
so.
Wait, since when was Davros your archenemy?
Yeah.
I thought I was.
But then at the same time, she's like, well, he's my best friend.
But man, when they dropped Davros' name in that episode, like, my jaw dropped.
Even the Doctor's jaw dropped.
And we're like,
yeah.
I literally, I was also kind of tipsy when we were watching that too, so I went, what the F and F? Because there was no hint to it. That's what's great about that. There was no hint to Davros at all being in this season in any kind of lead up. Because even last season we had, it either sounded like him or a Dalek talking in the trailer. So it's like, okay, we know we're going to probably get Davros this season, but it never happened.
Yeah,
and I was not expecting that to be part of this, so it makes me wonder how often we're going to have Davros this season. Like, he's probably part of the main arc, most likely, but anyway, continue on.
Well, even the Doctor looked, you could tell, he even looked like, oh my God. I made a mistake.
He sits back in his chair, I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah, and then he jumps in his TARDIS and just pieces out.
He's out of there.
And just leaves his screwdriver there. So now he doesn't have a screwdriver, and he goes back to present time. Well, not present time. He hides because he knows that he pretty much made a huge mistake, and he's in trouble.
It makes like okay, and that's what I was kind of confused by. I mean, I agree with you. I think now that you're wording it out the way, I believe that is what happens. He comes to present day, and then that's when everything else happens. Like, maybe that's when he creates his will and testament.
Yeah.
But I was actually kind of confused by that structure because I was like, okay, wait, where does this take place in relation with the rest of the episode? Because, you know, I don't want to give it away yet. We're about to get into it. But what he does at the end is like, I'm thinking, wait, does he do that after everything else happens? Or is it before? Like, I couldn't really tell.
Sure.
So I think we're going to get the explanation out of that in the second part. But, all right, continue
on. Okay, well, there's this snake guy that's walking around to all these different places that the Doctor has been seen at before, and he's looking for the Doctor so he can go speak with Davros. And this is now present time. Davros is on his deathbed, has just only a day left to live, pretty much. And he says that Davros is looking for the Doctor because Davros knows and Davros remembers.
Yeah.
And obviously he's referring to what we just explained to you guys. And no one wants to tell him where the Doctor is. And it's like this weird snake guy. And the thing that I think we all didn't like about him was he seemed like kind of menacing, except they tried to make him look like he was slithering. But it really just looked like he was rollerblading.
Yeah. No, or he like, wasn't rollerblading. I clearly pointed this out. As soon as I saw him moving, I was like, it's one of those Segway boards, those new things that are really popular all of a sudden.
You don't have anything with handlebars. You're just balancing yourself on
him. Yeah, you just balance yourself on him. And I'm like, he's totally riding one of those Segway boards.
That had to be exactly what it was. So it just looked silly, and I couldn't take him seriously after like seeing that because it's not like he had like a giant snake tail or anything coming out of the end.
If that would have been CGI'd in, that'd probably be a lot better of an effect.
Yeah, but so this guy's looking for the Doctor, and
And I'd like to point out before we go on, the places that he visits, we got to go back to the Shadow Proclamation. And from season four, at the end of season four, where Tennant goes to the Shadow Proclamation, they have the same actress from that season, so they're continuing on with the legacy throughout the. You know, the Smith era and the Capaldi era.
And also he goes to Karn.
Which is, again, a nice touch after the Night of the Doctor special.
Yeah, the little short. So this guy's running around looking for the Doctor. And in the meantime, Missy, or the mistress, is also looking for the Doctor. So she pulls a stunt where she stops all of the planes in flight, in mid-flight, and freezes them in time. And UNIT is freaking out because they don't know what is happening, and they know that it's pretty much out of their hands.
Like UNIT always does. They always freak out.
And so they get Clara involved. And Clara is the Doctor's companion, but she hasn't spoke to him in ages because that's how the Doctor is. He just disappears, and then he comes back whenever he feels like it.
Right.
And it's been a long time since they saw each other. And the last time they did see each other, they both saw Missy get killed.
Yeah.
So she comes back to life, of course, because Doctor Who.
Well, Well, that, and I would like to point out that's what the great thing about the mistress or the master, however you want to call her.
The maestro.
The maestro.
She's always comes back.
Might as well be. Maybe they'll call her the maestro later on. You're the maestro of this evil plot.
Missy the maestro.
I love how Moffat wrote it in. That is basically the trope of what is the master, because the master always comes back. There doesn't need to be an explanation, and that's what makes that great. And what did she say exactly? She's like, yeah, not dead. I know. All right, moving on.
Yeah,
like,
pretty much.
It's throwaway, and that's exactly what it's meant to be. And I feel like that there will be people out there that complain about that. Like, oh, she back. She died last season. It's like, no. You're missing the point. He or she always comes back.
Yeah, always. Always. Just
doesn't
like
need to be an explanation.
Just like the Daleks always come back.
Yeah.
They always come back.
If you try to make logic out of it, you might have a headache by the end.
You're going to fail yourself.
I mean, I'm sure they keep somewhat some logic to it, but at the end of the day, it's like, don't think about it, just accept it.
So, Missy sets up a meeting with Clara and some agents from UNIT so they can try to talk about where the doctor is and find him. And Missy receives the doctor's confession dial, which is basically for a Time Lord their last will and testament, and it will not open until after he dies. And so Missy, even being his arch enemy, she's still concerned, and she wants to find him, and she knows that she needs Clara's help finding him. So they use this algorithm that UNIT prepared so they can find the doctor.
I didn't really even understand that algorithm.
I didn't,
but,
yeah.
That
was one of the things where it kind of like didn't make any sense.
It's like, just go with it.
But whatever.
It was like quickly thrown in there.
Yeah, so they find out where he is, and he's in 1138 AD in Essex in a fighting arena. So they use vortex manipulators to get there, and, I mean, Missy is obviously, she's still as insane as ever. Go ahead.
Little side note, 1138, 1138.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah.
I saw 1138. I'm like, are you kidding me? We're throwing more Star Wars references in there. I loved it. But Missy is crazy.
Not Star Wars, it's just George Lucas.
Just George Lucas references. Yeah. Well, why not? It's the year of Star Wars, in my opinion.
Oh, whatever.
So they find him in this fighting arena, and there's like this big barbarian with an axe.
Like,
and
what's
a huge
happen?
Beard, just like ready to start fighting. And then you just hear this guitar fire up and just like start wailing. And
he's like, playing the Doctor Who theme on
it. Yeah, and he's actually playing the guitar. Like, it's actually him playing, which I thought was a nice touch because he can actually play guitar. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, fun fact about Capaldi, for those of you who don't know, he was actually in a band back in the day when he was younger. And he started a garage band with Craig Ferguson, of all people. Which is why Craig Ferguson is also such a big Doctor Who fan, and he's just happy his friend's on there. But they've talked stories on his show about dropping acid together.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah.
That's too funny to know.
That's amazing.
I just love how he rolls out riding on a tank.
Yeah, he's riding on a tank, playing a guitar with sunglasses on.
One of the coolest intros ever for the Doctor to come
just
back.
Just like badass. He gets off, and the guy is like, what are you doing? And he's like, I thought you said you wanted to have an axe fight.
Yeah. that is exactly what that was.
You're just like, what?
But that actually kind of reminds me. I mean, I know it's still Moffat's writing, but that also reminds me of something Smith would do.
Yeah, and he's like, the barbarian guy, he's like, what is that? And he's like, this is my tank. Do you like it? And he's like, I don't like it.
You don't? Oh, I don't like it either.
You redecorated.
I
don't like it.
I don't. So, yeah, that was hilarious. But you can already tell right there. It's like, all right, what is he doing? He's putting on this huge show. He's been in 1138 Essex for 3 weeks now.
And he thought it was one day.
Yeah,
he's like,
thought
oh, man.
It was one day.
He even says, I must be having a bad day. But, and I'd like to point out, he also plays when he sees Clara and Missy there.
Yeah,
he starts playing Pretty Woman out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Do.
Yeah, they're hiding in the corner, like way up above everyone else, and they start talking amongst themselves, and he hears them like immediately. Like, he just knows that they're there.
He starts
playing Pretty Woman, and it's just hilarious.
But that's also what I love about the Doctor is how endearing he is to the people that he cares about. Because when she comes up and she's like, you saw me, he's like, how do I not see you? In the crowd? There was a crowd?
Yeah.
Like, I loved lines like that. Like, that shows how much he really does care about his companions, even though he might put on a hard front.
Yeah, because this doctor especially, he shows, like, no sympathy for humans. Like, he thinks all humans are, quote-unquote, pudding heads. And he just, like, doesn't... This doctor here, he really seems like he cares the least about humanity.
Yeah.
Like, because this doctor is feels much more alien this time around. So when you see him being, like, emotional towards Clara and, like, actually being kind to her, even she's like, okay, so we're complimenting, we're being kind now. And he's and then he reaches in and hugs her, which is something that never happens. And she's like, oh God.
Especially
she's
with
like,
this doctor.
Yeah. She says, oh God. Something's clearly wrong. So we're hugging now. And she's like, what is wrong? So you just know that there is something seriously wrong. And basically the point of that is that he thinks that he's going to die. And we all think that he's going to die because there's like no way he can get away with not going to see Davros. And he knows when he goes, there's going to be a trap. And he's just planning for that to be the end.
And don't get me wrong when I say this. I certainly don't mind Davros being back. I don't mind this kind of plot line. I think maybe there's just a part of me that while I'm always still interested, there's also a part of me that's kind of sick of the whole the doctor's going to die. The doctor's going to die.
Because he never does.
It seems like every season that's how it begins.
He got a whole nother set of 13 regenerations.
Exactly. And that's why I'm like really kind of flabbergasted with why we still do the doctor's going to die storylines.
He has 12 more regenerations now.
Like, let's put it this way. It's that in itself is kind of getting old, but at the same time, there's enough writing and enough material to work with, so that way, at the same time, it doesn't feel old.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they changed it up. Like, last season, what did we have last season? We had Missy, and the doctor is, like, not sure if he wants to go through being a good... Well, then again, wait a second. Last season, there wasn't even anything about that. The doctor's gonna die. There was that in season 5.
There's
season
always,
6, season 7.
Yeah, but there's always an episode where you're actually scared that something bad is gonna happen to him, but you know that it can't be.
And that actually also comes to the end of this episode. But so we'll head up next here with basically what happens is they all end up going to where Davros is being kept, What did you have written down there?
Well, Missy and Clara,
they all go with
him. They go with him because they don't want to leave him alone.
Yeah.
Clara's pissed off because the doctor sent Missy his confession dial when they both saw her die.
Right.
Meaning that he knew she wasn't actually dead.
And plus, I think she's still kind of butthurt that...
He sent it to her when she thought that they were best friends. But he's like, well, we've known each other a long time.
She's one
like,
of my
no.
people.
The point, I feel like the real point, though, was the fact that he lied to her because he knew that Missy was not dead.
Yeah.
Or else he wouldn't have sent her the dial.
Also because the doctor knows everything about the master anyway. They have a long history, so he knows, she's not really dead.
Yeah.
Even he wasn't
and
really
so
that surprised.
Clara was like... She was like, don't apologize to me. Make it up to me. And she's like, there. Now you have to come back.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, the doctor, he's planning on dying. You can tell by the look on his face. But now it's like, he has to come back to her.
Yeah.
So they find out that the ship that they're taken to is actually not a ship. They're actually in a building on Skaro, which is the planet where... It all started with the Daleks, where all the Daleks were created, and also there was a really nice touch to it, where they showed the classic Daleks from the old,
the
older
original.
Show.
That was the original Daleks from the very second serial.
Yeah,
that was a very nice touch. I loved
that was
it.
Awesome.
It's like you thought
second
it was gone.
Serial?
Yeah, back in the day, the stories were called serials because it was like 4-part episodes. And
yeah, but then also. When the doctor shows up in the room where Davros is sitting in on his throne, like all hooked up to all these tubes, there's screens all around the room showing all the other doctors who have ever encountered Davros talking to him.
Again, a nice touch.
And that was also a really nice touch. That was cool.
Which also harps back to, I mean, not necessarily that they were doing this to point it out, but the Tom Baker part that they showed was from the one of his most well-known serials, Genesis of the Daleks, which is where he has the chance to stop the Daleks from ever being created. So Davros was still Davros, but that was right when he was about to start creating them.
Yeah.
So now in this one, he has a chance to completely get rid of Davros before he becomes the Davros we know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, yeah.
Yeah, so they find out that they're on Skaro. Everyone starts freaking out. The mistress is even scared. And the Daleks procure the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting that while they procure it, they also don't use it.
Yeah, they don't use it. They want to destroy it, which doesn't really make any sense because it's such a powerful piece of equipment. They could use it for virtually anything.
Right. They can actually, like, move around through time. I thought that's what the season was going to be.
Yeah, so at the end, the Daleks end up killing Missy and Clara
and then destroying the TARDIS.
And the Doctor is just, he's left with the choice of killing every single last Dalek on the planet.
Basically. Well, that's what's for the next time episode. But yeah, yeah. It ends with, again, we brought back the cliffhangers.
Yeah.
The old...
Because it still confused me because, the TARDIS was destroyed. You see this big giant flash, and then all of a sudden he's back on that planet from the very beginning of the episode with young Davros, and he's going to kill him.
Right. Well, that
how?
Well, here's the thing. Well, he had the Dalek beam gun in his hand.
With a broken bit of Dalek.
How did he get there?
The TARDIS.
The TARDIS was destroyed.
Well, no. Remember, the kid even asked him where'd you come from? And basically, it just didn't matter. And I'm assuming he had another vortex manipulator. That's what I'm assuming. But there's no word as to how he got there. So that's also why I was confused.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, wait, where does this take place then? When does this take place?
Unless he already did it.
Okay. Right. I can understand if he has a vortex manipulator. I mean, and then people will be like, well, where would he hide it? He has pockets.
His
pockets are deep.
Yeah, his pocket. Literally,
Time Lord pockets.
Yeah, he has Time Lord pockets. They're bigger on the inside. They are.
They point that out in previous seasons.
That's true. It's like, where do you hide all this stuff?
My pockets are bigger on the inside.
But I'd like to point out how much I love cliffhangers being back. And it seems like that's going to be a trend with this season because we're going to have a lot of episodes that could be two-parters, might not be two-parters. We don't know. They even tease that. But cliffhangers being back is very, very...
A very welcome
re-addition to this.
I enjoyed this opener better than the season 8 opener.
So this is our initial reactions?
Oh, we just went through it all.
Yeah,
I'm thinking initial reactions for the movie, but we're just kind of winging this one. I think we're just more fanboying out right now. We're just kind of enjoying this.
I overall loved it. There were some parts where you're just kind of like questioning like either how is this even possible or like what the hell is going on right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's Doctor Who, and with Doctor Who, you just kind of have to enjoy it and just let certain things go because Doctor Who.
Because Doctor Who. And as far as next week goes, next week we do have Gotham coming back. So we're going to talk about Gotham, but at the same time, I would like to follow up at least a little bit on this Doctor Who episode since it's
actually
a two-parter.
Coming at, Gotham's going to be on tonight, so we're going to have to watch that.
Yes. Kurt, you didn't watch all through Gotham yet. You need to do that. You'll enjoy it. So that was last week on TV, everybody. We're going to give you a couple brief news stories right now. So as a follow-up to our news story last week about Nickelodeon, remember we said they might be bringing back some of the 90s cartoons?
Uh-huh.
They're actually, it looks like, there's not a whole big official word yet, but there is going to be a 90s Nicktoon channel called The Splat.
They are finally doing that Patrick meme from SpongeBob,
yes,
where you see him going, why don't they take all the good 90s TV shows and give it their own channel?
It looks like they look up memes because... they must have listened.
Finally, they're doing something right. Finally.
Hopefully, it actually happens, though. Because you said that nothing official has been confirmed. It's just kind of like rumors.
They confirmed the splat. They've confirmed that. But as far as what exactly else will be on this, if it is a channel
like,
or if it's like...
shows?
No, they did. They said it was 90s cartoons.
Well, yeah, I know that. I'm saying that as far as it being a channel, it could end up being a block... Like a certain block throughout the week or something.
Kind of like how they do Adult Swim on Cartoon Network, like after 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
It could be like an hour, like not an hour block. I'm not saying like, but like a big time slot block on Nickelodeon for all we know. But it's looking to be like it's a channel.
Mm-hmm.
So we could be getting that in the future, and this gonna include cartoons like Rugrats, Hey Arnold, Doug, Real Monsters,
Angry Beavers.
Who doesn't love a little bit of Angry Beavers? Cat Dog.
Yes.
Oh man.
Hey Arnold.
Cat Dog was about 2000 though. I loved Hey Arnold.
Yeah.
The thing that made Hey Arnold so great was the fact that it was so simplistic.
I loved that the beginning music was straight up jazz music.
Here we go. Here we Arnold.
All right. What do we got next?
We got a Super Mario Maker level is going to be coming to Super Smash Brothers.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I love Super Smash Brothers.
I heard about that a while ago.
Which was funny because when they announced the game Super Mario Maker, I'm thinking, something tells me they're going to make a level for Smash Brothers, because that's what they love to do with Smash. They love to include anything Nintendo that they can into it.
If you guys haven't played the new Smash Brothers, you need to reevaluate your life, because it is seriously like
story is
the best game ever.
A truer story has never been told. No, but the Super Mario Maker stage is going to be very interesting, because you're going to go into it, and the level it will always be different. Every time you come in, there's going to be new elements. It's going to change up every time.
Yeah.
And when you break blocks or break up part of the stage, the hand that shows up in the Mario Maker game that you see as a visual representation on the screen will come back and fix it.
That's pretty cool. And you know what else would be cool? If you get in the way of the hand, it hits you and like does damage.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, or if it's like, say you jump up in the air and you're coming down to attack someone, and then all of a sudden it draws like a line of blocks, and you're like, crap.
Yeah,
that would, like, I was about to attack him.
That would piss me off.
Yeah.
I'd throw the controller.
Shows up and draws lines and stuff.
Nope. And we're also going to be getting DLC for Super Mario Maker eventually, which will be nice. I mean, awesome. That's a side note. But that level's going to come out for Smash Brothers on September 30th.
Definitely buying that.
Yeah, I'll be
buying
it too.
We're going to play it, and then we'll let you guys know, how it goes.
Oh, yeah. And I actually have yet to buy the other characters that came out for it.
I only bought one. I bought Roy, because I really like playing as Roy.
Yeah, there was Roy, Ryu, and who else?
Lucas.
Lucas, yes.
From Earthbound.
I'm just going to have to get a whole package. Just get everything all at once. Hopefully they do something like
that. You already have Mewtwo.
Yeah, that was a free download, though.
Oh, was it?
It was free because I had both the Wii U version and the 3DS version.
Oh, I was going to say.
So, that's our news stories, because we wanted to have more time to get into the movie review, the spoiler review of the day, The Maze Runner, Scorched Trials.
I think it's safe to say the Maze Trials were a complete success. It's too soon to say, but they could be the key to everything. It's time now to begin phase two.
Welcome to the Scorch!
Not bad.
So I'd like to point out before we get started, we are reviewing this just as the movies. None of us have read the books, so we're not going to be doing any comparisons to the book, because from what we understand, the movie itself, not the first movie, but the second movie, is quite a bit different than the book.
Yeah, because I actually, Corey and I are just horrible with names. So we just cannot, like, I can remember everything that happened in the film, but we cannot remember the names of the characters. So I'm online, like, looking up. Well, yeah, see, Kurt got it, but we just suck with names.
And it's funny that you say that, Jacob, because every time we bring up a story, like, months later about something, you recite something word for word, and I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I remember. I have a pretty good memory, but
selective.
When it comes to names, I'm just horrible. I cannot remember names.
I got you.
So let's give our initial thoughts about this film, and we'll give it an out of five. So why don't you go first, Jacob? What do you think of the movie?
I enjoyed it better than The Maze Runner, I have to say. Definitely liked it better than The Maze Runner. It was more action-packed consistent throughout the whole film, and that's something that I like. I don't like being bored, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And also, the story is pretty cool and consistent, and there was a couple little plot twists thrown in there. Overall, it was pretty decent, and I'm probably going to have to give it like a 4 out of 5.
4 or 5, okay. Go ahead, Kurt. What's up?
Okay, so I got to say,
you look like you're kind of torn.
Yeah, but I'm also tired.
Yeah. I'm having a great time this morning, guys. This is good.
No, but I have to say,
it's hard because I want to say that I did love the Maze Runner more, like the first one.
Really?
Because I loved it for its originality. Like, I mean, it was based off a book, but it was so well made. Like, it really was. And, like, it had a bit more suspense and more shock factor to it because, like, the Grievers, like, when I saw those things, I was actually, like, scared. I was like, oh, my God, this is something I've never seen before.
Right.
But then when I see Scorch Trials and then you see people that are infected with the flare, like, they basically just look like zombies. That's all they were to me. They were just zombies.
Mm. Yeah.
I was not scared. And then then when you see the deformed ones where they look like, the best way I could describe it, the Flying Dutchman crew from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't think of that.
You like that? You like that?
Me and Corey both thought that they looked like clickers from The Last of Us.
Well, they do. Like alpha.
But you gotta admit.
We're talking alpha clickers, but yes.
Yeah. But the Flying Dutchman crew.
That's actually a good comparison,
too. Because
they
kind of, like, crack off the wall.
Part of the ship. Part of the crew.
But yeah, no. See, because when I saw them, the advanced versions look like that. It was kind of cool looking, but that's immediately what I thought of when I saw it. I was like, ah, that's nothing really that new. See, those Grievers from the original, I was like, damn. Like, those look
kind of like
scary.
Half mutant, half machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
I thought it was so interesting.
So as far as the sequel, how did you feel about that?
As a sequel, it lived up to it. Like, it didn't, I can't say it surpassed it. But at the same time, I could say it did. Like, it's very rough. I think they're both on par with each other.
Okay.
Like, they both had good and bad elements. Yeah. Like, each had their own. So I'd still give both, like I gave the first one 3.5 to 4-ish in there. And I do the same with this one, about 3.5 to 4 around there.
And that's kind of where I am. I think, and I wanted to be able to point out at least a little bit about the first film when we started this review. With the first film, I was actually kind of surprised how much I enjoyed it because it's a very well executed film. I think as far as
what? You're welcome, by the way.
Yeah. Well, hold on. We all agreed at first we weren't sure if we wanted to review this, but I wrote this down as a possibility for this week's review, and you told me it was good. So either way, I was going to be watching. I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to sit down and watch this.
When The Maze Runner came out, I like immediately watched it because I thought it looked cool, and I was just like, dang.
But also because there's this trend of young adult novel movies coming out, and most of them are rough.
Yeah,
all like, the pre-tween. That's what I was always saying. I thought it was going to be another Insurgent / Hunger Games styled movie.
Slash Twilight movie.
Right. That's what I thought it was going to be, and I'm like, you know what? I don't know, because the trailers actually made it look kind of cool. So I was like, I'll give it a chance. I watched it, and I was like, holy crap, this is actually really good. And then I told you guys about it, and you're like, For a long time, I was saying to watch it.
I am selective with what I watch, but if it's for the podcast,
I'm not.
Do it for the podcast.
I'm not selective. I will literally watch anything once. I might get on my phone and start texting if I'm really bored or if it's horrible, but I'll finish watching it.
Oh,
I'll make
it through. Then finish The 100.
No, that's not happening. No. We're not getting into that.
Not right now. It's time for Maze Runner right now. But like I was saying about the first film is that I was surprised with how well the tone was executed. The look and the feel of everything was right. It was on par. It was actually well done. I think maybe, if anything, I would like to see just a tad more humor out of it to make it just a little bit more enjoyable. But it is a dark world it comes out of. I think with these movies, though, probably the biggest flaw is that it is plot-driven. It's not character-driven.
Yeah.
Even though the first movie, you get Thomas, who's a person who doesn't know anything. So you are literally learning along with him, which is a great setup for anything.
Yeah.
But by the first act, you should probably have a little bit of development in this character.
Yeah.
And even then, we don't really know who he is or what he did to get there. So the first film, I think at the end of the day, the frustrating thing is you're left with more questions and little to no extra clues.
You find out very little about what happened. You find out that Thomas worked for Wicked, and he was sending the kids up into the raid.
He was part of it. But you don't really get to know anything else about him until the second movie.
Yeah.
So when I'm watching the second movie at first, the tone and everything still feels the same right off the first film, just in a different scenario. So yeah. As I was watching, I was studying. I'm thinking to myself, okay, wait, is this any better? I don't know if this is any better. It's a lot of the same, a lot of the same. Then we get to the third act of the film. We finally get some character development out of Thomas, and we get to know who he is at least a lot better. And the third act is what put me up to a 4 out of 5. Right now,
yeah.
Because I enjoyed it a lot more. I've seen reviews online and Rotten Tomatoes. A lot of it's getting mediocre reviews, and I can understand that.
Sure.
But ultimately, as far as enjoyment goes, I actually enjoyed this a lot better
than
the first movie.
I was very scared about the way that they were going to open the film, because it literally takes place immediately after the first film.
Yeah.
Because the first film, at the end, they get on they're saved by the rescuers. They get on a helicopter and fly off to a facility. The beginning of the second film, the helicopter lands at the facility and they get off and go inside. It just literally just goes straight from the end of the first film.
Yeah.
And I thought that they were going to do some crappy narration to explain kind of what happened in the first film, just in case you didn't see it.
Yeah.
But they do none of that, and I was so happy that there was no narration. I hate films.
Well, that's because that's how they did it in the books. Yeah.
Yeah, but I hate films that feel the need to have to narrate so you can understand what's going on. It's like, no.
Yeah, no.
Show us throughout the film what's going on. Like, explain it to us through, like, character interaction, yeah, and dialogue and,
yes,
and events. And it's just like, I hate narration. And I was just so happy that they didn't do that.
Again, harping back to CinemaSins, narration or reading? Ding.
Yeah, just horrible.
I can tell you right now, when he goes and does the Star Wars movies, he's going to sin each one. Reading. Ding.
Yeah, there's always reading.
I mean, it's the title
crawl,
but it is what it is.
You can't, because it's the crawl.
It's the crawl. It's meant to harp back to the old days of Flash Gordon, but it's still reading.
It's the
crawl. You
know
he's going to sin it, though.
It's the crawl.
The crawl.
So basically, for those who don't know, we're just going to go a little bit into the plot. We're going to give you a brief summary. So Thomas and the other gladers are transported to the remote fortified outpost, where they find themselves in trouble after uncovering the true plot behind Wicked, who are the creators of the maze. And with the help of new allies, they escape to the desolate landscape known as the Scorch, which is basically a post-apocalyptic visionary Earth, where dangerous obstacles and virus-infected Kranks, the creatures we were talking about. And their only hope throughout this film is to find a group of resistance fighters known as the Right Arm, who might be able to harness the power to take down Wicked. So we're gonna break this down a little bit, scene for scene. So basically, the movie opens up where they're taken to the facility. They're met by the guy, Aiden Gillen. I think I pronounced his name right. He's from Game of Thrones. That's what he's most noted for. So they had to get a bit of a big name in there,
mm-hmm,
into the film. They meet others who survived apparently multiple mazes. And a boy named Eris comes and helps them appreciate what happens is that they're actually taking people.
He showed that to Thomas, yeah.
Right. They're taking the kids a group at a time, and I mean, for what it, to me, it looked like carbon freezing, just with like.
Well, no,
they weren't frozen.
What happened was
they were strung up on tubes and they were like dissecting them.
Yes, and they were harvesting them because the enzyme that they need to cure this virus,
yeah,
is in them, and it can't be.
Yeah, because all of these kids are immune to the flare virus.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah.
So they need to harvest the enzyme from their body because it can't be manufactured.
So they realize, right, this is a terrible thing, and they all have to leave. So
guys, bad things happening. Get out.
Eventually, they escape.
They escape, and it's actually quite thrilling.
Yeah,
like,
it was good.
They're getting out, you're just like, oh, yeah, this is pretty good. Like, you're actually scared. Like, you think that they're not going to escape.
Right.
I was really hoping. I was like, please don't have them go through all of this just to get caught again. I was about to be so mad.
Yeah.
So I thought for sure that they were going to get caught.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I do believe this is a very well-executed movie, and with what they do to keep the suspense going, it's very well done. So basically, they run out into the Scorch, and they're like, oh, and what he said, he's like, you won't survive a day in the Scorch.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, that was a little bit lame in my opinion.
If the heat doesn't get you, the Kranks will.
And the Kranks, in my opinion, are very legitimately scary. Like, I was actually like terrified.
It's like almost as terrifying as Christmas with the Kranks.
Oh, I really want that to be a meme now. Can someone please, if you're listening, or we might even do it and post it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, let's
do it. We're gonna Photoshop Christmas with the Kranks, and it's going to be the Kranks on the cover.
Yes, we're gonna do that.
Oh my God, that's the thing of the day. I love it. That should be a look. It's a thing. We might just promote our own thing next week.
For those of you who want to know, the cranks are basically just zombies. There you go. That's why they're scary.
So, but yeah, they're fully virus-infected people. And long story short, they escape, but their friend Winston actually gets bitten, and he realizes he's a goner.
Yeah.
So when he shoots himself, and again, this is one of the issues with having the films like this, where the group, because not one person really grows, even though Thomas should be the person that grows, the whole group is kind of your trope to get through the movie. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of treated all as one protagonist. So when one person dies that they care about, that the audience didn't really get to know, while you feel the gravity of the situation, you don't really feel for that person.
Mm-hmm.
We never really got to know this Winston. All we care about is the fact that the group cared.
Yeah.
It's not as deep a feeling as it should be.
Yeah, because we have no emotional attachment to him.
I will say, though, the camera shot of them walking in a line, and then you hear the gunshot, and they all just stop and turn back. That was a good camera shot. That was good.
I love the colors and the imagery.
It was nice.
It was very lovely.
I don't know. I liked it.
What a day. Oh, what a lovely day.
Okay.
So, where am I at? So, that's when eventually they come across a building where there's a lot of people, and when all hope seems lost. And this is where we get to meet one of my favorite actors, George, played by Giancarlo Esposito.
Jorge.
And
Jorge Villalobos. Okay.
Now, granted, character is not the only character in the film that really stands out, but that is what we also needed out of this film. The first film, while I was interested and wanted to get to know these kids, at the same time, there wasn't any one real character that stood out, besides Will Poulter's character, whatever his name is, the bully. You know who I'm talking about. He died at the end.
Oh, of the first one?
Yes.
Yeah, him.
They speared him.
He was the only one that was remotely interesting because he had such a brash personality. And what we needed was a little bit more of a flamboyant, different personality. And when Jorge came on, not just because of Giancarlo, who played Gus Fring in Breaking Bad, by the way, go watch it. His personality is what we needed. Mm-hmm. We needed something to really change up the tone-deaf characters that I was just kind of getting bored of.
He was a little bit wild. Yeah, he was a little bit wild and out of control, but at the same time, down to earth.
Yeah. So anyway, again, as they go through, he decides he wants to keep them because they're valuable for the enzyme, but Wicked catches up, and basically they destroy the facility, so they're, like, getting out of there. And that's where Thomas and Jorge's friend Brenda, they get split up together. They go deep underground. They find more cranks, which is where I was legitimately terrified. That was the first time I was like, okay, this is
yeah, those are the Pirates of the Caribbean ones.
Yes.
The Flying Dutchman
literally
ones.
I mean, the whole time, it's kind of stupid because they're walking down in this, like, sewer, in this tunnel, and they see this like, weird plant sort of thing, like, growing down in there. And it's like, okay, this looks really creepy, and I have no idea what it is.
Let's go check it out.
Yeah, it's like, let's go near it. Maybe touch it a little bit. It's like, Thomas is like, what the hell is that? And I looked over at Corey. I'm like, if you have to ask, don't go near it.
Yeah. Go towards the light. That's your way out. That's like movie logic 101 right there.
It is.
But they get out. But as they get out, and I'd like to point out, because me and Kurt were both kind of annoyed by this, one of the things with these kind of films, these adult young adult novel films, is that they're going to show things that people have probably already seen before, just in a new thing. So as far as the scene where she's sitting, he already knows, she lands on the window as it starts to crack. Now, suspenseful scene, it is, but it was already done via Lost World.
We literally both looked at each other, me and Corey, we looked at each other and we're like, dude, that's freaking Lost World.
Also, there was a scene similar to that in...
We'll come back to you.
Wanted.
Okay.
Oh, okay, yes.
Remember that?
Lost World did it first.
Yeah, but again, but I also kind of want to give it a little forgiveness because today... We're 20 years out, basically, from Lost World. So we have a whole new generation of people coming to see these movies. These kids probably don't care at all about the old films. Like those who probably saw Jurassic World didn't see the originals.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why you wouldn't. But you know, you kind of forgive it because you're reusing old ideas that have done it better. But anyway, they get to a mini town. That's where you get to meet Marcus via played by Alan Tudyk,
which again, which is really cool.
Which again, it's a nice another change up, giving us another character that's very flamboyant and giving us something else to like pay a different attention to. So they eventually get to meet the right arm, the whole group, and they freak out because Brenda's actually infected. But then anyway, it's like, oh, all seems pretty good. Everything's fine. So Teresa, which again, Jacob and I were talking about this. I was actually surprised by this because there's a small brief clip where they defeat a Wicked officer and she sees the walkie-talkie. I thought she was going to keep the walkie-talkie so that way they could listen in, because I thought everybody was on the same side. I understand Teresa was like having feelings of doubt.
Yeah.
But I actually thought she was still with the group. But when she actually calls down Wicked to come to where they're located, yeah, I was legitimately surprised, and I was like, what? You bitch.
Yeah, see, I knew that was coming immediately. Like, when they were in the facility being attacked by Wicked, and there was the guard laying on the ground, she runs past him and stops and looks at his radio. You could just see the look on her face, like, should I do it or shouldn't I do it? Like, yeah, she was questioning herself, but you know she picked it up.
She looked shady.
Yeah, you know she picked it up. And yeah, and I knew that she was eventually, I didn't know when, but I knew she was eventually going to give up their location so Wicked could come get them, because you could tell when she was talking to Thomas about how, like, Thomas, you know, this, what we're doing isn't okay. We need to go back to the facility. Wicked is good and all that stuff, yeah, which is, like, the main theme for Wicked is Wicked is good.
Right.
But they're not.
And you know, in the experience of watching movies, I was already in expectation that Wicked was going to catch up with them. I just didn't know how. I just thought they were eventually going to find them. But when Teresa did it, that's where I was like legitimately surprised. Like, I did not expect that out of her. But now she's becoming a very unliked character, Turtle Face. So, but anyway, Dr. Ava Page shows up finally in the flesh. She comes with Wicked, and they attack, blow up everything. And Minnow.
Mina.
Mina? It's spelled out M-I-N-H-O.
Oh.
See, looking at it literally, I'm thinking Minho.
I think it's Mino.
But I think it is Mino.
Mino.
Yeah.
Mino.
I'm pretty sure it's Mino.
The Asian kid guy.
Yeah.
Kid.
He was my favorite character.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
There was one, there was like so many parts where you just like thought he was going to die.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no!
No! Don't die! No!
Like, seriously, like, in the original Maze Runner, he was my favorite character, and in this one, he's still my favorite character.
He's easily the most likable.
Yeah,
because
he really is.
I think it's not only because of his experience, but at the same time, his character is also very reasonable.
Yeah,
and he's willing to talk things out.
His hair,
that hair, though. That's another thing I wanted to bring up. In the 3 years that they've all been there, who was their barber?
Seriously?
Mina's hair is perfect.
It's perfect.
It's perfect.
What did
all
you
the
use?
Time.
Tree sap to keep your hair up.
They've never showered. Because where are you going to shower? And they don't have, like, soap or anything like that. So
3 years of no showering and perfect hair oil.
Yeah, they do have, like, knives and things like that.
Teach us your ways, young ones.
they have knives and things like that. But it's still, it's like, if you cut your hair, like, I could cut my hair off with a knife right now if I wanted to. But it would still not look that good.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
And also, how are they shaving? How are they shaving their faces?
It's like you'd think they'd all look like Tom Hanks from Castaway.
Really? Tim Hanks?
What year is it?
Yeah, you do soon.
Oh, that's Jumanji, I'm thinking.
But anyway, so Mina was taken, Teresa went with them.
And they basically...
At the very end, they're just like, we need to go save them.
Yeah. It's like, what's your plan? Roll credits.
Yeah, really. Exactly. They don't...
They really drug out that very last moment.
They're like, what is your plan? And he's like, and then they're just like, bam.
Credits.
And that's another thing that I, like, because Jacob, you saw me fidgeting the entire time. The first time where we could find out about Thomas's past is when Teresa's like, it wouldn't have happened if you didn't... What?
What did he do?
And then it's like, never mind. No, I want to know!
Yeah, they did that like two times throughout the film, then finally the third time, and they still drag it on, and they're like, Thomas, you know what you did, and then you're just like, what did he do?
Yeah.
You guys know, I don't, I want information too!
Yeah,
they had really good suspense in it.
Basically, Thomas was giving intel to the right arm.
Yeah.
As basically, he told them everything that they needed to know about Wicked so they could try and stop Wicked because he wanted to stop killing his friends.
Yeah.
But so, that's why they sent him into the maze.
So that's the film. Final thoughts, guys? Anything else you want to add? I think just ultimately I was pleasantly surprised for being a young adult novel based film.
I forget what the old guy's name was, where the old guy who was with the right arm.
Oh, the actor Barry Pepper?
Yeah. Him. Who got on the turret on the truck. Okay.
He's badass.
Okay. I have one problem. They had a cargo ship laying on the ground. And they knew they were going to be taking passengers away. Why didn't he just shoot the rotators on that one?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So it couldn't take off.
Right.
They wouldn't have gotten away, and then they could just kill each other off, and everyone would die. Or they could win, or they could lose. But the point is, they would not be able to get away.
Right.
Yeah, and they wouldn't be able to take anyone with them.
Exactly.
And you know that they're not going to kill...
Is he that much of an idiot that he starts attacking a helicopter that's flying around that's not even shooting at them anymore?
Because plot.
Yeah, and you know that they're not going to...
Plot development.
Yeah, they're not going to kill the immune. They're not going to kill the kids.
That guy was just retarded. He should have shot the cargo plane. They would have never been able to take off. We would have solved the problem. Mino wouldn't have been taken, and Teresa could be killed, that traitor.
Maybe at the beginning of the next film, they'll be like, guys, I just realized something. We could have stopped this whole thing if you would have shot that helicopter.
Yeah, you jerk.
Should have shot the plane, you piece of crap.
So, yeah, all in all, I think we all agree that this is actually very enjoyable. If you did see the first Maze Runner, it definitely doesn't hurt. Go see it in theaters, or wait. Blu-ray. I mean, this wasn't one that I was like particularly excited to go see, but I was still interested enough to find out what happened. So,
yeah, it was worth it.
Nerd
I'm
consensus.
I'm a fan.
Yes.
Go see it. Especially if you like going to the theaters.
Yes. Yeah. Go see it.
I swear there was a guy like either one or two rows behind us that was like sleeping though. Because I swear I heard somebody snoring.
Well, like, the guy sitting to my right, his phone kept going off, and I literally went to him, and I'm like, really, dude? I literally just turned my head. He saw me look at him, and I said, really, dude?
There was a little
kid. And
it
was beeping. That's what annoyed me.
Yeah.
Like, he could have just easily turned it on silent. But no, the guy had to be a douche.
Man. There was a little kid sitting right next to me, and I swear he was afraid of me. Because he did not move at all the whole time throughout the film. Did not move.
I can't stand people next to me.
Like, I swear he didn't even breathe. He was like, who is this man with this outrageous long hair?
You should have just...
Sitting next to me. He looks like a freak.
Maybe while he was sitting there and you could tell he was trembling, just, like, slowly turn your head and look at him. Just...
I know I was being obnoxious because I had nachos and there were, like, crumbs in the bottom of the thing. And every time I moved it, they all, like, slid down into one of the corners. And it was like... And it was always at, like, a really quiet part. So you could hear... It was super loud.
So that's our movie review, guys. So let's get into Ask the Nerds. And Kurt has our question for us today. So shoot it, Kurt.
So if you guys, with no background knowledge... No background knowledge, and all you know is your name... And you were sent up into the glade, into the maze. What would you do? Would you want to live there? Would you try to escape? Would you get curious?
Like, you know what? I think I would actually be as reasonable as the guys that were there for... I mean, I wouldn't say 3 years long, but I can understand them sitting around, like, just determining what they can do.
So you would trust their judgment?
Yeah, like...
Because they've been there long and they know.
Well, even... Okay, well, how about we just say you're the first one to come in? You don't know what's going on.
Okay, if I was the very first person...
And you didn't know that there would be other people coming.
Okay. Well, first thing I'd try to do is, like, get food and try to, like survive. Because, like, I don't know where the heck I am. I'm alone. I gotta make a shelter. Gotta get food. And also make sure, and also keep track of if there's enemies out there. Like, right. you got it.
Right.
But the maze, that's different. Like, I'd go in, like, I'd get a feel for it, and I'd just be like, okay, this is a maze. I'm going to go back to where there's safety for now. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do. But I'd still be curious, and I'd still eventually go travel.
I'd probably be living there first, experimenting what I can do, what it is I could do to look around, and like they did, Maze Run,
yeah.
and understand the length of how far it goes. I definitely agree with that. But I think as far as, like, I'm sure I'd be freaked out at first, but I would take my time and plan it out carefully before I go and do anything harsh, unless something changes it up, like the Grievers showing up the way they did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, naturally, if you wake up in a cage surrounded by a bunch of village people, like, and you
wait, the village people?
Yeah, you can't even remember. you can't even remember your name. You would be freaking out. It doesn't matter who you are.
You would
be freaking out.
The construction worker and the Indian and
yeah,
those village people, right?
Yeah, and like the mummy guy.
There's a mummy guy.
There's a mummy.
Yeah.
If there isn't, there will be.
Yeah, you know, the werewolf, vampire.
They start singing YMCA. No, stop!
There's like a troll standing.
I've been living here long enough. I don't need music like this.
So I can't say that I wouldn't be freaking out, but I would have to say that my very first instinct would probably be like, how the hell do I get out of here? And I would try, like, as hard as I could, as fast as I could, to get out. So I would, like, immediately, once I found out that there was a maze out there and there are people that run the maze, I'd be like, take me with you. I want to see what's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So.
Simple right. enough, yet a dystopian future that I would never really want to be a part of.
All right, cool.
Unless it's a young adult novel, because then it's...
Yeah.
It's a mediocre story for me.
I just don't like not knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
And if there's something out there that I can learn about... Like, I want to be involved in it. I don't want to just be, like, sitting in the glade, ignorant, not knowing anything, and just leave it up to someone else.
Yeah. Take us out, Corey.
That's our show, everyone. You probably already know how to reach us, but in case you don't, here's how. You can follow us on Podomatic.com or through iTunes on the podcast app. Like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at JustNerdStuff1. Get involved. Give us comments or suggestions because our show is shaped by you. Or ask a question for our Ask the Nerd segment. If we pick it, you'll get a shout out. If you use iTunes, do us a favor and give us a rating and review. And as always, don't forget to share a podcast with your friends because we need to spread the nerdiness. It's time for the fun fact of the day.
Reading. Ding.
I can't remember that all. It's all in my... I can't retain anything. So Blake Cooper, who played Chuck in the first movie, he apparently used Twitter to get an audition for the movie. He said, quote, "My mom and I heard that a movie was being made based on the books, so we both read the first book, ended up loving the book. I used Twitter to help me get the audition. Then after the audition, I started reading the next one. And after filming, I finished that one and went on the third one." So if you think social media doesn't have real power, that's real power right there.
Check that
out. That's pretty interesting.
That makes me think about the band Journey. Remember when Steve Perry dropped out and they needed a lead singer, so they go to YouTube and they find this Polynesian doing a cover band? And, like, he just posted his videos just because.
Yeah.
Now he's singing for Journey because they called him and they were like, "You're really good. You want to sing for us?" What?
What?
Yeah. And when the guy speaks, like, you can hardly understand his English because his accent is very thick.
But he sounds so much like Steve Perry when he sings.
But he sounds just like Steve Perry, yeah. It's crazy.
So if you think the internet is not that powerful, you got another thing coming.
Praise be the 4chan.
Praise be Zombo.
Praise be the Zombo.
Praise be the Zombo. Have a great day, everyone.
Stay nerdy, universe.